Romans chapter 1 is one of those chapters that are very famous for several reasons. Sometimes we look at it and we think of how evil the world is. How many ever thought of Romans 1 about how evil the world is? And that's kind of how we think of it. I'm going to kind of blow your mind a little bit this morning. Not totally, because it does describe that. But there's something more I want to share with you. Also, the book of Romans is oftentimes looked at as maybe a theological statement on salvation. How many ever thought of that? It's kind of like Paul's theology of salvation. And it is that. It is that to some degree. But how many of you know that Paul was not writing a Bible school curriculum when he wrote the letter to the Romans? I'm going to propose to you this morning, I think I've told you this before, it's very difficult for me these days to read the Bible without seeing the gospel all over it. And I'm going to propose to you this morning that this is a missionary support letter. It's a missionary support letter. Let me give you some basis for that. The whole letter, I'm going to just talk a little bit about the earlier part. Ted covered this last week, but just to kind of frame the rest of the chapter, Paul starts out this whole book of Romans with a mission statement, basically. He said, hey, I'm an apostle. I've been set apart for the gospel. I've been called to bring about the obedience of faith for the sake of his name among all nations. How many of you know that's a mission statement? He said, this is who I am. This is what God has done in my life. This is what my life is all about. It's for the obedience to his gospel for the sake of his name among all nations. And that is, in essence, what the Great Commission is, to take and make disciples of all nations. And Paul simply walking that out. The end of the book, 16th chapter, it's almost like he reiterates this. He talks about my gospel has now been made known to all nations according to the command, not the suggestion, according to the command of the eternal God to bring about the obedience of faith. See, in both of these scriptures, Paul's talking about the mission that God's given me is to bring about an obedience among the nations, an obedience that comes from faith, but it's brought about by the preaching of the gospel. And then Romans 15 is where the missionary support letter comes in. So Paul says in Romans 15 that, and it's where we get the word no place left. When we talk about no place left, he said, from Jerusalem to Illyricum, I have fully preached the gospel, and there's no place left for me in these regions. How many of you would be able to, would be a blessing to be able to say, we have preached the gospel, there's no place left for us in Ohio? I mean, this is a large area. From Jerusalem to Illyricum was about 1,000 miles. And Paul was saying, I've been diligent about this work that God's called me to do, so much so, I don't have anywhere else to work here, so I'm going to make a trip, and I'm going to come and visit you in Rome, and when I get there, I'm going to bless you, but I want you to help me get further. I want to go to Spain. I want to go to the end of the world. I want to go to where Christ has never been named. I want to talk to those people who have never ever heard about him. And he says, I make it my ambition to preach the gospel, not where Christ has already been named. Since I no longer have any room for work in these regions. And then he says, I hope to see you in passing as I go to Spain and to be helped on my journey there by you. That's the missionary support. Help me out when I get there. Why, Paul? Because my mission is to take the gospel of Jesus to those who've never heard. So I think at its core, the book of Romans is a missionary support letter. He's explaining to these people in Rome who he is, what he's all about. He's never met these people before, but he's telling them who he is, what he's all about. And as he goes through and begins to teach about the gospel, about the Jews and about the Gentiles, he's basically trying to say, look, this is the gospel I'm preaching. You can be secure in helping me because I'm taking a good message to all nations, to Jew and Gentile alike. And so praise God that he was very detailed in his mission and asking for support and giving such a beautiful background on why he's worthy of getting help from the church in Rome to go to Spain, which is even further beyond. So let's get into where I was going to begin today. In verses 14 through 16, Paul says, the three I ams, that's what I call it. He says, I am under obligation. I like that word. It means there's a pressure, some kind of obligation that you feel. And he says this obligation is to Greeks and barbarians. How many of you know what barbarians are? And they're like really mean, nasty, wicked people. If you were living back in those days, you might say, let's avoid the barbarians. I mean, we can go to the Greeks because they have good culture, but not the barbarians. Paul's saying, I have an obligation to the Greeks and to the barbarians. It's all people. And he says, I am eager to preach the gospel. Eager. I am obligated. I am eager. And then I'm not ashamed of the gospel. I love this, I don't know what you want to call it, urgency that Paul had in his life. And I think the next two verses tell us why this preaching of the gospel is so urgent to him. Verse 17, he says, it's for in this, in the gospel, the righteousness of God is revealed. You see, the only way that people can ever be made right with God is through the good news. It is the gospel of Jesus Christ that has come into the world, into a world even full of barbarians. How many were a barbarian before you got saved? There's a few of us out there. This gospel has come into the world of I'm just going to say, barbarians and Greeks to reveal to us where righteousness comes from. And it comes only through the death and the burial and the resurrection of Jesus Christ. That is the good news. And then in verse 18, he puts another four. So I'm eager to preach. Why? For in it, in the gospel, the righteousness of God is revealed. For, now how many of you know when there's a four, what are you looking for? What's the four there for? It could say because. And his next words are because the wrath of God is revealed. So what Paul is looking at here, when he looks out upon this world, the world full of barbarians, the world full of sin, the world full of wickedness, he's saying the wrath of God is being revealed here. And because of that, I have to preach the gospel. See, when he looked at the sin of the world, it wasn't like, look at those evil people out there. It was, Lord, without Jesus, these people are lost forever. I'm obligated. I'm eager. And I'm not ashamed because it's only through the gospel that the righteousness of God can be revealed. Let me talk to you about the wrath of God for a little bit. Verse 18, it says, for the wrath of God is revealed from heaven. This is a present tense word. When you hear the word wrath of God, I think what often comes to our mind is something that's going to happen one day in the future. And there is a future. There is a future wrath of God. Romans 2 will speak about that. That they were storing up for themselves wrath against the day of wrath. But he's talking about a wrath that is actually revealed now. It's out here. We see it. It's existing. Just as much as the righteousness of God is present and real and revealed right now. Two things are revealed. The righteousness of God and the wrath of God. They're both present. They're both happening. And so the wrath of God is revealed. So present tense. What else does it say about the wrath of God? It is from heaven. When you look at the sin of the world, which he's going to describe here in just a little bit, I want you to see it not just as the depravity of man. It is that. But it is in reality the wrath of God manifest. And we'll get into that in a little bit here. It's like God at the same time is revealing his wrath and the way to righteousness in the world. And Paul, when he is down here looking at this sinful, barbaric world, he's saying, because the wrath of God is revealed, I am moved to do one thing, and that is to show the people the only way to righteousness. That's his mission. That's what motivated this godly man. And Paul was saying to the Romans, I want to do that everywhere. I want to share that with people who've never, ever heard about it. And I want to go to Rome, and can you please help me to do it? So the wrath of God is revealed from heaven against two things, all ungodliness and unrighteousness of men. You could describe ungodliness as sin against God. You could describe unrighteousness as sin against man, man's sin against man, who by their unrighteousness suppress the truth. Did you guys realize that the wrath of God is actually revealed now? It's not just a day. It is a day. But it's happening right now in front of our very eyes. Verse 19 says, let's talk about this suppressing, what it is all about. It says, they suppress the truth by their unrighteousness. In verse 19, it says, for what can be known about God is plain to them. This sounds kind of like a heavy message today, but it's really not. This message brings me extreme joy. I hope you'll have the same joy when we're done with it. What can be known about God is plain. God is saying that everybody in the world has no excuse for not acknowledging him. There's no excuse. Whatever can be known about God is plain because God has shown it to them. For his invisible attributes, namely his eternal power and divine nature, have been, here's the word, clearly perceived ever since the creation of the world in the things that have been made. So God's basically saying, no matter where you live on this planet, every human being who's ever breathed a breath is without an excuse because God has made it very simple that you can know him only by creation. And so all of mankind stands guilty before him and without an excuse. Here's a couple of scriptures to kind of support that. Psalm 19:1, the heavens declare the glory of God. I mean, I don't know if you can ever go outside at night and look up at the stars and say, somehow God is involved in this. I mean, there's billions of galaxies and trillions of stars, and how could we ever manufacture some of that as a human being? The heavens declare the glory of God. The sky above proclaims his handiwork. Here's another one, Job 12. Ask the animals. How many have a dog? Go ask him when you get home today. Ask the animals. They will teach you. Or the birds in the sky, they will tell you. Or speak to the earth, it will teach you. Or let the fish in the sea inform you. How many like to fish? Next time you pull one out of the water, say, hey, where'd you come from? It says, which of all these does not know that the hand of the Lord has done this? I mean, if the birds and animals and the earth and fish know their creator, we're the greatest of God's creation. We're without excuse, just by the fact of the creation. So all people stand in that spot. We can never really say, I just didn't know. It's not really a question of intellect, knowing something. It's a question of the will. And here's what it says next. For although they knew God, they did not honor him as God. That's where it begins to turn. That this group of people he's talking about, and it's really all of us at some level, they knew God, they did not honor him as God or give thanks to him. They became futile in their thinking, and their foolish hearts were darkened. And it says, claiming to be wise, they became fools. You know anybody like that? Maybe you were that person at some point in the past. You knew God, didn't really honor him as God, didn't give thanks to him for all that he's done. Somehow you had what was called futile thinking, futile thinking. I have a definition here. Futile thinking is that which leads to a direction that will never be the solution. You know what I mean? It's like, wow. And the darkened heart. A darkened heart is one that is blind to the reality of their condition. So that's where this all leads. When we know God, but we don't honor him as God, we don't give thanks, it leads to futility, the wrong solutions, and ultimately it leads to a darkened heart. We don't even recognize what in the world's going on in my life. And that's the condition that Paul is describing for those who are experiencing this wrath of God. He goes on to say more. Romans 1:23. Now, here they are. These are people who have thought they were wise, but they're foolish. So what did they do in their foolishness? Here's what they did. Number one, it says they exchanged the glory of the immortal God for images. So you're going to see three things here. Three exchanges. They're going to exchange one thing for another. And then you're going to find three times where it says God gave them up. Three exchanges and three times God gave them up. So the exchanges are what we do. That's mankind's part. We do the exchanging and God does the giving up. So they exchanged the glory of the immortal God for images, resembling mortal man and birds and animals and creeping things. Therefore, God gave them up. I'll tell you, I don't know about you, but that is some of the scariest words in the Bible. For God to say, you knew, you didn't honor me, you chose your path, you're futile in your thinking, your foolish heart is darkened, you're making foolish choices, and you've changed the image of the immortal God into beasts, I'm going to give you up. Let you go your own way, basically. God gave them up in the lust of their hearts to impurity. That's what the wrath of God looks like. The wrath of God is, in this case, it's not fire coming out of heaven. It is God basically saying, have it your way. If that's what you want, I'm not going to fight with you anymore. This is what you chose. I'm going to give you up to that. On the person's side, it looks like I'm free. I can do what I want. There's no consequence. There's no reason why I shouldn't pursue what he calls here impurity or dishonoring of my body among ourselves. It looks like freedom, but it's actually the wrath of God. You don't want God giving you up. You don't want that. And that's what's happening here. Next, verse 25, because they exchanged, there again, they exchanged now the truth about God for a lie. And they worshiped and they served the creature, that which was created, rather than the Creator, who is blessed forever. Amen. For this reason, there again, God gave them up to dishonorable passions. For their women, here's an exchange. The women exchanged natural relations for those that are contrary to nature. And the men, likewise, gave up natural relations with women, and they were consumed with passion for one another. Men committing shameless acts with men and receiving in themselves the due penalty for their error. What is this? God giving up. We see an onslaught of this in our world today. It is a picture of the wrath of God. God has basically said, hey, you want to exchange what's natural for what's unnatural? I'll give you up to do it your way. It's scary to even think about. And that's the world we live in. But I want you to also know that Romans 1 is not a picture of 2026. This was written in the first century. This has been the picture of mankind all through history. So don't make it into something it's not. It's a picture of man when he is cut off from the mercy and the grace of God and his involvement in their life. When we say, God, I want to choose this, I want to exchange this for that, and I want to go after that, it's almost like sin takes us to the nth degree. And we feel free. We feel like I can do whatever I want, not realizing that very thing is bringing destruction to our life. It's a picture of the wrath of God. God is doing this. When you say Romans 1 is about the depravity of man, you're missing a huge part of that, which is God gave them up. God is involved in this work. And then, verse 28, since they did not see fit to acknowledge God, God gave them up to a debased mind, to do what ought not to be done. You ever done things that you shouldn't have done? Or do you know people who are doing it? God gives you up for that. He gave them up to a debased mind to do what ought not to be done. They were filled with all manner of unrighteousness. Now, before we get into reading the rest of this verse, sometimes when you hear about Romans 1, all people want to focus on is homosexuality. It's a mistake. It's not that. alone. It is all these things. You know, don't make Romans 1 to be something it's not. It's more than the depravity of man. It is man exchanging something, truth for a lie, essentially. Exchanging a truth for a lie. And God saying, have it your way. And then sin carries out its ultimate end result, which is to bring death. And while we're doing it, while we're practicing it, we think we have freedom because judgment has not been executed speedily. It's happening. You just don't realize that it's actually going on. So they were filled with all manner of unrighteousness, evil, covetousness, malice. They're full of envy, murder, strife, deceit, maliciousness. They are gossips. What? We're talking about stuff that even we struggle with here. They are gossips, slanderers, haters of God, insolent, haughty, boastful, inventors of evil, disobedient to parents, foolish, faithless, heartless, ruthless, ruthless. That's what I am when Ruth's not around. I struggle with this sin a lot. But I just want you to see that Romans is way bigger than we sometimes think. It is a picture of the wrath of God poured out into a world that has exchanged truth for a lie. And it's manifest by these terrible outworkings that we call sin. And Paul was saying, because the wrath of God is being revealed, I'm moved to preach the gospel. That's the only answer to the problems in our world today. Here's a few scriptures here I want to share to show you that this idea of God giving them up is not new to Romans. It's throughout the Bible. Psalm 81, God, I gave them over to their stubborn hearts. Hosea 4, Ephraim is joined to idols. Leave him alone. Acts 7:41, God gave them over to worship the host of heaven. 2 Thessalonians 2, verse 10, because they rejected the truth, God sends a strong delusion that they would believe a lie. This idea of man rejecting truth for a lie and choosing his own path, and God basically saying, okay, have it your way, has been a pattern of God's dealing with man all through history. But it's like in Romans 1, it kind of comes out really strongly. And it becomes the basis for why we should preach the gospel. If there's anything that could be worse, it's the next verse. Anything that could be worse than what we've already said, and that's verse 32. Though they know God's righteous decree that those who practice such things deserve to die, they not only do them, but they give approval to those who practice them. So Paul, when he's writing this, again, this is not a theological workbook here. He's saying, brothers, I'm going to come to Rome and I want to go beyond you and preach the gospel where it's never been heard. I want everybody to have the opportunity to hear the good news of Jesus because the wrath of God is revealed. Here's the evidence. It's all around us. It's persistent. It happens again and again. It is with all people everywhere. Now, I want to share with you a closing thought. In John 3:36, whoever believes in the Son has eternal life. You believe in Jesus, you have eternal life. Whoever does not obey the Son, why does he change the word believe to the word obey here? Anybody have an idea? It's because that's what true belief is. True belief is walking in obedience to Jesus. It's surrendering to him as the Lord of my life. And so he says, those who believe in the Son have eternal life. Whoever does not obey the Son shall not see life, but the wrath of God remains on him. Why did he say the wrath of God remains on him? Because the wrath of God is already on him. It's not just a future date. It is a future date, but it's not just a future date. It is already on the people of this world. It doesn't look like what you think it should look like. And it's not God just walking away. It's abandoning them to do what they feel they want to do. But the thing I want to share with you as I close is that the same God whose wrath is being revealed is the same God who calls us to preach the gospel. Paul was an apostle of Jesus Christ sent to bring about obedience, the obedience of the faith among all the nations. If God didn't care about this world, why would he even call us to preach the good news? Why would he even want to inject that into the life of all these, I'll call them barbarians? And you need to realize this, that you too were one of those people. You weren't, what's the word I want to say? You weren't all that before you knew Jesus. Before you knew Jesus, and maybe you didn't realize it, but the wrath of God was on you. And you did what you wanted, and you pursued your life, and the God said, have it your way. But thankfully, somewhere along the line, somebody had enough boldness and urgency and commitment to walk up to you and say, you need Jesus. Well, what if they don't want to hear it? They may not. But if they don't, the wrath of God will remain. And the ultimate of that is, you know. I'm going to close with this. Randy, you want to come up? Randy back there? Yeah, there he is. We're going to have Randy come up and lead us in prayer, and then there's going to be a baptism in just a moment here after that as well. But it's four ways that you can respond to the evil in this world. Ready? And I bet you that we walk in at least one of these now. One is, you can be judgmental. I've been this way before. It's easy to hear about, see, maybe even experience the evil of another person towards you. You read about it in the paper. Things happen in your community. You see it all around you. And after a while, you just begin to get like, who are these people? And you can almost begin to get like this, us versus them. We're good. They're the evil ones. We're good neighbors. We do this. We do that. Look at those people causing all the problems in our world. And it could be a very judgmental thing. You need to realize that, I think Romans 2, we're going to talk about next week, Romans 2 puts everybody in that boat. None of us here are going to be able to stand up and say, us versus them. You could have a second way to respond is just what I call sad observation. Maybe you've done this. You could look out there and say, woe is me. Look how bad the world is. I wish I lived back in Daniel Boone's day. Guess what? The world was bad in Daniel Boone's day. The world was bad in the first century. It was bad when he flooded the world with Noah's time. We can have a woe is me. It's getting worse and worse and worse. How many of you have ever said the world is worse now than it's ever been? Not true. It really isn't. Thank you now. It's always been this bad. It's always been this bad. And when you look at it, it is, remember, It is not just the depravity of man you're seeing. It is the wrath of God that you're seeing. Don't ever forget that. A third thing you can have, a third response would be just be humble and recognize that but for the grace of God, there go I. That the only reason why you're removed from that is because you've believed in Jesus. Somebody came and told you the good news and you said, yes, Lord. And he saved you from wrath. He brought you from the kingdom of darkness into the kingdom of light. That is the only thing that saved you. Those two things are revealed in Romans 1. The righteousness of God revealed through the gospel and the wrath of God. The fourth way, and I'm asking you to step into this or think about it, is like Paul, take up the mission. When he saw the wrath of God, his motivation was, I'm obligated. I have an obligation to Greeks and barbarians. I'm eager to preach the gospel. There was just something about looking out on this world with the evil the way it was that caused him to say, I want to do something about it. And the only solution, it is not a political solution, it is not an economic solution, it is not a cultural solution. The only solution for what we're talking about in Romans chapter 1 is the righteousness of God that's revealed by faith in Jesus Christ. And that comes about in one way, and we'll cover that in Romans chapter 10. How can they believe unless they hear? How can they hear without a preacher? And how can they preach unless they're be sent? How beautiful are the feet of those who bring good news? Romans is, in my view, you may disagree, in my view, it is a missionary partner letter. And Paul's describing the condition of the world and why he's preaching the gospel that he's preaching. Why it's open to both Jew and Gentile, Greek and barbarian, free and slave, because all people are under this wrath of God until they turn their heart to Jesus. The same God who reveals wrath is the same God who calls us to preach the gospel. Don't sit back and point your finger at the world unless you're willing to go tell somebody about Jesus. Can I say that to you in a nice way? Don't start reading the newspaper and yelling about how terrible the world is. Go do something about it. Go do something. Every one of us can play a role in helping one person or another person escape the wrath of God. May we say with Paul, I am under obligation, I am eager, I'm not ashamed.